the comlink in danger? Or did she pose a threat to himself and the senator? Was this meeting a trap? Was he about to fly into another unanticipated explosion? Would this leap of faith prove fatal? He couldn't tell, couldn't see ahead clearly. It only made him more unsettled. He pushed himself deeper, seeking answers, but none came. All he found was a headache, punishment for trying to bully information from the Force. Abandoning his fruitless search at last, he broke free of his trance and went forward to the cockpit, where Organa was muttering under his breath as he made copious notes on a data pad. "How far out from our destination are we, Senator?" Organa took one look at him and stopped muttering. Tossing the data pad aside, he straightened out of his slouch. "What's wrong?" He shook his head. "I don't know. Something, a feeling. I can't pin it down." "What do you mean you can't pin it down?" said Organa, not quite hiding his alarm. "You're a Jedi." Obi-Wan dropped into the commsat seat. "Which has never equated to being infallible, breathlessly gushing holonet news reports notwithstanding." "But there's trouble," Organa persisted. "You're sure of that much?" "I'm sure I have a bad feeling," he replied, "which I'd be foolish to ignore. How far out are we?" "Oh," Organa checked the nav comp. "Not far. We're practically there." "What do you want to do?" "Turn back time so this mission never happened, or, failing that, tie you hand and foot and stuff you in a cupboard," Obi-Wan thought. Then he said, "Proceed. I don't see that we have any choice." "No," said Organa, a new tension in his voice. "We don't." He slid out of the pilot seat, collected his various data pads, and carried them back to the passenger compartment. When at length he returned to the cockpit, he had a small, lethal-looking personal blaster belted at his hip. Obi-Wan bit back a colorful curse. Wonderful. Bail Organa in a shooting match, and if anything happens to him... "Senator," Organa flicked him a forbidding look. "I don't want to hear it, Master Kenobi." "Of course you don't," he thought. Nevertheless, he was duty-bound to say it. "I am expressly mandated to keep you safe, Senator. Therefore, I cannot permit you..." "Okay," said Organa, ignoring him, dropping out of hyperspace in 3, 2, 1. As the elongated stars contracted, returning to their usual configurations, Obi-Wan felt a wave of foreboding surge through him, thick and cloying, coating him with dread. Negligently dangling beyond the cockpit viewport was a short, squat spindle of tarnished metal, burnished with low lighting. A space station, many decades old, chosen from the economy catalog. Corellian in design, he was almost sure. It had that particular raffishness about it, a reckless disregard for convention and neatness. There was no planetary body in sight. The space station hung lonely against a backdrop of unrelieved black. A long way from home, out here in the uncharted regions. "Well," said Organa on a long, slow exhalation, "that would explain why the nav comp didn't recognize the coordinates." He flicked a glance sideways. "Still got your bad feeling?" He nodded. "Oh, yes. So maybe it's not such a good idea to activate their homing beacon." "Maybe not," he agreed. "I suggest we glide in, Senator. No bells and whistles, no signature at all. A nice, inconspicuous, silent approach." "Uh-huh," Organa pulled a face. "All right, it'll be like trying to glide a brick, but I'll do my best. And have you got a nice big blanket we can hide under while we're at it? They're going to have external security cams, you can bet on it." Obi-Wan closed his eyes, feeling his Force awareness hum and thrum with alarm. "If they do, I have a nasty suspicion they're no longer functioning," he murmured. "Senator, I strongly suspect we're flying into mayhem." "Not flying," said Organa, rolling his eyes. "Gliding, like a brick. Hold on, here we go." He powered down all superfluous ship functions, fingers dancing over the helm console, then cut the dull, serviceable Starfarer's sublight drive. The engine's subliminal rumbling fell silent, leaving an odd kind of emptiness in its wake. The cockpit lights dimmed almost to darkness. Feeling the ship's immediate inertial drag, its sluggish wallowing through the void toward the battered space station, Obi-Wan shifted sideways a little and braced himself against the nearest bit of wall. Like a brick indeed, he thought. May the Force be with us. In the fuzzily greenish glow from the helm console, Organa's face was grim and set, jaw clenched against the effort of wrestling with the deliberately crippled ship. His fingers were bloodless on the helm controls, fighting to keep their course true, fighting to prevent them from crashing into the space station. Obi-Wan, watching him, was prepared to concede his skill. The senator wasn't an idle boaster after all. He was, in fact, an excellent pilot. But even the best pilots can sometimes use a helping hand. Sinking into the Force, he gathered its measureless power to him, felt the light fill him, sparkling in his blood. Once he was supremely centered, aware of himself and his place in the universe, aware of Organa's place, the duet they sang within the Force's living glory, he extended his senses and control, wrapped them around the struggling starship, the gliding brick, and cradled it in a cocoon of pure light side energy. Immediately, the ship's sluggish inertia smoothed, became malleable. Frictionless now, and rendered opaque to any prying eyes that might be watching, it floated toward their target, the space station. What the criff? Startled, Organa almost let go of the helm controls. He felt himself smile. Relax, Senator. There's no need to worry. Easy for you to say, Organa muttered. What are you doing? Think of me as your co-pilot, he replied, and be calm. Floating within himself, suffused with the Force, the source of every comfort and joy, he poured more control through the skin and bones of the ship, exerting his will on the lumpen machine. It answered him, a part of his body now, as responsive as his arm or his hand, and through the Force became as his own flesh and blood. His eyes showed him the space station swiftly filling the viewport. Like a shark beneath deep water, unease flicked its tail. Soaked in serenity, his focus absolute, he let the darkness flow through him like water through a sieve. Yes, there was danger. He would meet it in due course. But he was in the light of the Force now, and would remain there until his task was complete. Nudge port, said Organa, shifting the helm control. We've got a clear docking ring. He nodded dreamily. I see it, Senator. We're still coming in too fast. I know. He breathed in deeply, feeling the power surge in his blood. Breathed out hard, impressing his will upon the stolid starfarer, tightening the Force around its sturdy frame. The ship lost more momentum, glided slower and slower, slowed further, was barely moving. And as he slowed the ship, Organa played its helm controls like a master musician, coaxing it to pirouette like a dancer on an opera stage. The starfarer docked with the space station, sweet as a summer kiss. Organa released a noisy sigh and sat back. Now that was something. That was the Force, Senator, Obi-Wan said, and breathed himself free of its sublime embrace. Felt the dreadful wrenching as they were gently sundered. Was overwhelmed, just for a heartbeat, by a dreadful sense of loss. And even as the bright light drained from his blood, he felt that cold lash of foreboding redoubled. Organa had powered up the sensor array and was running a scanner over the space station. Vape it, he said, looking around. It's got some kind of shielding. I can't read through it. Obi-Wan touched his fingertips to his lightsaber, holding his shouting instincts at bay. I can, he said grimly. Senator, are you sure you want to do this? Are you competent to do this? Answer me honestly. We're on the brink of an abyss. Instead of uttering some bravado reply, Organa looked at him. Even after nearly 5 days in this cramped starship, the man was neat and tidy, impeccably presented, a self-aware politician from groomed head to polished boots. But his eyes were uncertain, in their shadows lurking fear. And then he nodded. Yes, Master Kenobi, I'm sure. and I'm competent. I must do this. I know it probably sounds crazy, but those are my people in there. Obi-Wan shifted his gaze, letting it rest on the space station. I could drop him in his tracks without laying a finger on him. I should. This man is a civilian. It's my business to protect him and the people we came to meet. Organa unclipped his holster guard, eased the blaster on his hip. Master Kenobi, we're burning daylight. Yes, yes they were. Burning daylight, and burning bridges. Those are my people in there. Then come, Senator, he said, and snapped his lightsaber free. Let's go and save your people, if we can. Chapter 15. There were three bodies on the other side of the docking ring door, all male. Bail swallowed a nauseating mix of relief and rage seeing them. His contact might still be alive then, even if three of her colleagues were slaughtered. If these men were her colleagues, of course. They could be intruders, cut down by defenders of the space station. A buzz hummed beside him. Blaster in hand, he turned, his nerves jumping, to see that Kenobi had ignited his lightsaber. The Jedi held it before him, angled slightly across his body, its electric blue light clean and lethal in the sputtering illumination of the small docking bay interchange, with its riveted metal walls and discolored metal ceiling. The door into the space station proper was partially open, the corridor beyond it tinged a dirty reddish orange. Emergency lighting? Possibly. This was certainly an emergency. Kenobi dropped to a crouch and checked the pulses of the fallen men. They're gone, he said, rising smoothly again to his feet. It would have been shocking if they weren't. Each man had an ugly, blood-wet hole burned through his chest. Three blaster pistols were discarded around them on the buckled metal floor. Kenobi stabbed his lightsaber through them in three swift, methodical moves. Melted blaster metal puddled and ran, the air thickened with a scorching stink. Bail frowned. Couldn't we have used those, maybe? Perhaps, Kenobi said, shrugging. But so could whoever killed these men, and we don't know yet whose side they're on. True. Acutely aware of sweat trickling down his spine, down his face, into his eyes, aware of his heart drumming hard against his ribs, Bail nodded. Fair enough. Soft-footed in his supple leather boots, Kenobi crossed to the half-open door and bent his head, listening. Or maybe feeling. Something Jedi, anyway. He looked unnervingly remote, the lightsaber casting odd blue highlights over his face. Bail was abruptly aware of his own lingering awe. He floated a starship with the Force, Bail thought. A whole starship. And he didn't even break a sweat. I wasn't expecting that. It's just not something you see every day. Senator, said Kenobi, glancing up, the corridor is clear. Are you ready? Was he ready? Well, he could handle a blaster, he knew that much. Regular practice on a Coruscant firing range ensured that he was, as the expert said, a crack shot. And, of course, being the scion of his house, as a much younger man, he'd been taught certain self-defense techniques and tactics. But the galaxy was a different place now. So, because he believed in being prepared, no matter how remote the chance of danger seemed, because he'd seen how narrowly Padme had escaped death on Coruscant, and because he knew that the coming of war changed everything, whether he wanted change or not, he had made it his mission to be further trained by experts in the messy business of a more aggressive self-defense. They'd trained him well. He was indeed competent. But he'd never fired at a living thing in his life. Never tried to kill anyone. Never had anyone try to kill him. And now, he was staring at the likelihood of both experiences. Maybe within the next few minutes. There were three men dead on the floor behind him as proof. Men who had shot at other men before. Men who most likely had killed many times. I thought I was ready. I might be wrong about that, Bail thought. But he couldn't afford doubts and second thoughts now. Somewhere in this rickety old space station was a woman who'd risked her life to help him. He wasn't about to let her down when she needed his help, when her life might depend on that crack shot, Senator Organa. Kenobi was waiting for his answer. He nodded, his mouth dry. Lead the way, Master Jedi. Stay close behind me, Kenobi said. His forehead was creased, and his eyes were dark with furious thought. If I tell you to do something, you must do it without hesitation. This is no time for self-importance or pride. Bail opened his mouth to say something cutting, then swallowed the hasty words. Don't be a fool, Organa. He's a general in the Grand Army of the Republic. He's seen more life and death warfare in 3 months than you'll likely will your whole life. Right here, right now, he outranks you in every way. Understood, Master Kenobi. I will follow your lead. Kenobi nodded, a little of the tension easing from his face. Good. And they entered the silent and dingily lit access corridor, treading lightly, breathing softly. Bail felt the hairs stand up on the back of his neck. There was a scarlet trail on the metal floor, leading them to the corridor's far end, where another door, closed this time, blocked their progress. Blood. He was walking through blood. As he followed Kenobi, who seemed oblivious to those red splatters and smears, Bail felt his fingers tighten on his blaster. I could be dead soon, he thought. This could be the last thing I ever do. Control your thoughts, control your feelings, Senator, said Kenobi, not turning, a bite in his voice. Focus on the moment. Don't let your mind stray. Thus spake the Jedi Master to his sweating, heart-hammering, unlikely apprentice. Bail blinked hard to clear his vision, and did as he was so curtly told. They reached the end of the corridor. The door sealing them off from the space station's interior was solid metal. No handy porthole so they could see what they were getting into. But apparently, Kenobi didn't need a porthole. Pressing his left palm flat to the door, he closed his eyes and disappeared. Not physically, of course, but mentally. Just as it had in the starship's cockpit, his face softened into the most extraordinary expression of serenity, with hints of an iron will behind it. The access corridor continued eerily silent. The door had to be soundproofed. Anything could be happening beyond it. It was so hard to wait for Kenobi to speak, to share what he was learning through his mysterious force, to be patient like a Padawan and do as he was told. Kenobi exhaled and returned to the moment. His fingers curled around the door's handle. It was sticky with blood. Then he turned. All serenity burned from him now, nothing but implacable determination in his eyes. We'll be going in hot, Senator. Prepare yourself. Now. Kenobi flung the door open, and they leapt into bloody mayhem and violent death. No time to think, to feel, to be afraid. Time only to react, as the experts had trained him. His wide gaze swept the room in front of him, seeking hostiles, seeking cover, seeking to tell friend from foe. Blaster bolts screamed through the chaos, seeming to fire from every direction. This was some kind of command center. Consoles and desks and chairs and equipment, commsat panels, a weapons station, four banks of monitors, racks of shelving, spare parts scattered across the floor. The air stank of energy weapon discharge, was hazed with acrid smoke from burning wiring and equipment. Here and there, small, greedy flames flickered. He saw three attack droids protected by heavy shields, squat and deadly, relentless fire pouring from their extended weapon arms. Three male humans, apparently their allies, crouched behind cover and shot their ostentatious blasters without stopping. It was impossible to tell who they were, what societies had spawned them. Two more men slumped in death on the floor. No way of telling their origins either, or whose side they'd been fighting on. As Bail threw himself obliquely toward a tipped-over desk, good enough cover, his blaster extended, finger taut on its trigger, shooting at the attack droids, he saw a woman returning fire from behind one of the four banks of monitors, darting out of cover to increase her chances of a strike. She had an athlete's physique, clothed in a sleek, dark gray bodysuit, blonde hair pulled back tightly into a long braid. Everything about her suggested determination and courage. Her head turned, and she saw him. A crooked smile, furious and relieved and feral, flashed across her strong, hawkish face, and she said his name. Organa! her voice lost in the cacophony. Then, sitting behind her cover, she tugged a comlink from one pocket and waggled it at him. A signal, a gesture to tell him that she was indeed his mysterious benefactor. But before he could shout to her, ask for her name, the comlink was discarded and she was ducking behind the monitors as a fresh barrage of blaster fire tried to annihilate her. Eyes burning, ears ringing, the noise in the confined space was excruciating, shuddering through his bones. Bale choked on the stinking smoke and looked for Kenobi, found him immediately, and nearly choked on a shout instead. "You fool! You mad fool! What the cark are you doing?" Kenobi had made of himself a deliberate target, was standing in the open between the door and the nearest wing of the command console array, willfully drawing fire from two of the droids and all three of the men. His lightsaber was a blue blur, whipping so fast, deflecting the barrage of blaster bolts into the floor, the ceiling, back toward the droids and the humans, his defensive offense seemingly effortless, his face in profile a mask of severe concentration. No fear, no doubt, instead, a supreme confidence, curving his lips the merest hint of a smile. Dazed, Bale shook his head. "He's enjoying this. He's enjoying this. He really is mad." But mad or not, Kenobi was also brilliant. The men had dived for deeper cover, and the attack droids were starting to give ground before him. The one on the left moved slowly, unevenly, its shield apparently failing. Kenobi's lips parted in a fierce grin, and he focused his deflections on the weaker machine, risking himself further, but not seeming to notice or care. Unsure if Kenobi needed help, incapable of doing nothing, Bale sighted his blaster on the same vulnerable droid and let loose. The droid's shield flared scarlet, then collapsed in a dying screech of failed power. Half a heartbeat later, the droid blew apart in a white-hot flurry of metal fragments and flame. He saw Kenobi leap vertically, his lightsaber still whirling, escaping the explosion even as the other droid increased the ferocity of its attack against him, and two of the men joined it in a fresh assault.
"Organa, behind you!"
It was the blonde woman, his contact, who'd refused to tell him her name. Abandoning Kenobi to his amazing Jedi devices, Bale swung about to see one more droid and another two men blasting their way into the space station's control center from a door he hadn't noticed in the most distant, partly obscured wall. Fearfek! Whoever these attackers were, they'd come as a small army. Instinct and training and a desperate determination to survive swallowed him alive then. Scrambling for fresh cover, skin-crawlingly aware that now he had armed enemies behind him and in front of him, and maybe even on both sides as well, he remembered something one of his military trainers had told him. "We can, and we do, make these scenarios authentic, Senator, but nothing can take the place of a real live firefight." Captain Varro had in no way been exaggerating. Panting, feeling battered and bruised and bizarrely disconnected as time sped up and slowed down, warping fantastically around him, Bale drained his blaster's power pack against the enemy, replaced it with a new one from his holster belt, his fingers shaking but sure, and continued to defend his own life and the life of his anonymous benefactor. He couldn't see anyone else fighting with her, which meant either she was alone on this station, or any colleagues she had were dead. The air was so thick with smoke now, it was hard to see, even harder to breathe. He could feel his lungs tightening, his stomach churning, taste something foul and bitter on his tongue, feel it coating the mucous membranes of his mouth. Probably it was toxic, probably every gasp of air, every swallow was poisoning him. But he didn't have time to worry about that. He couldn't worry about the stinging burns on his hands and face either, or the razor-thin cuts through his shirt and trousers and into his flesh from the metal slivers peeled off the space station's consoles and floor and walls by the endless barrage of blaster bolts. Couldn't think about the three men who'd fallen to his weapon, to his honed expertise. Senator Organa was a crack shot indeed. Through the wreathing smoke, he caught sight of Kenobi, a blur of motion and a dazzle of lightsaber, as he leapt and spun around the cramped, crowded command center. So many hazards in this place, so many chances to miscalculate and die. But the Jedi didn't put a foot wrong. If something was in his way, he force-pushed it clear or left it in a blur of motion, unnervingly aware of every potential obstacle. He'd take two more of the attack droids, at least one man. How many did that leave? He didn't know, couldn't count. He was punch drunk from adrenaline, numbed by all the noise. His head was ringing. How long had they been here? It felt like days, like moments, like all his life had been lived in war. He aimed his blaster at another of those vaping attack droids, pulled its trigger, and the weapon droned, its charge empty. Vape it. Vape it. The droid's shield was damaged, sputtering as it lurched toward him, toward the blonde woman, and he only had one power pack left. She was still firing. She still had a working weapon. Exhausted, half-blinded by sweat and by smoke, he fumbled out the dead power pack, struggled to shove the new one in. The vaping thing jammed. It jammed. This wasn't happening. No, 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 no! Come on, come on! He rammed the pack home, felt the charge run through his blaster, turned, and raised it to fire, as one of the remaining attack droids unleashed a fresh volley of fury. He saw the edge of a console blow apart, heard a terrible scream, saw Kenobi flip up and over the right-handed console array, deflecting the droid's blaster bolts back on itself and toward an enemy human beside it, keeping the man pinned down and harmless. Smart move. And then came a high-pitched scream as the last deflected energy bolt found its target. Even better. Best news of all, the functioning attack droid stopped firing. At least one of the deflected blaster bolts had scored a hit. Landing lightly behind the droid with the weakened shield, Kenobi speared his lightsaber through its defenses, piercing its central control node, killing it, if a machine could be killed. An odd silence fell then, broken only by the sound of a woman in agony, made all the more terrible by her struggle to stay silent. Kenobi, looking tired now, and who would have thought that was possible, spun around again, his lightsaber raised. "It's over," he said, staring through the drifting smoke. "Whoever you are, you're the last man standing, and you can't defeat me. Nor can that attack droid beside you. We both know it's done for. Surrender your weapons, and I promise you won't be harmed. You don't have to die here. There's been enough death." The last man standing said nothing. Bail lifted his head cautiously and caught a glimpse of their surviving enemy on the far side of the charred and ruined comm console. Wounded and furious, he clutched his burned shoulder with a bloody hand. For himself, he was desperate to get to his injured contact, but didn't dare move. Wounded or not, the enemy was still armed and likely to shoot. "Don't be a fool, man," said Kenobi, in his voice a hairline fracture of stress. He was brilliant, but he was human, and he'd borne the brunt of this battle. "Stand down!" Bail saw the man shift, saw his blaster slowly lower, heard him say, "All right, all right, I sir." The droid beside him opened fire, clearly not as done for as they'd hoped. Three quick bursts, and the surrendering man was dead. And then, as Obi-Wan leapt for it, the droid exploded in a plume of flame. His leap carried him over the burning shrapnel, left him singed and smoking, and for the first time thrown off balance. He landed awkwardly, lightsaber disengaging as he stumbled against a partly destroyed bank of monitors. Bail lurched to his feet, coughing. "Master Kenobi, are you all right?" The Jedi straightened and swung around. His face was streaked with sweat and smoke. "Yes, are you unharmed?" He nodded, even though 100 small and not-so-small pains were clamoring for his undivided attention. "I'm fine, but my contact..." "Do what you can for her," said Kenobi, reigniting his lightsaber, "while I make sure there are no more surprises waiting for us elsewhere on this station." As Kenobi left the station's command center, Bail shoved his way through the smoldering debris to the woman he'd come so far to meet. She lay on her back, her cut face slowly bleeding, her shallow breathing labored, an ominous glaze creeping over her eyes. Her relief when she saw him was palpable and closed his throat. She was worried about him? Oh, mercy. "Organa," she whispered, her voice bubbling in her throat. It was the sound of drowning when all around was dry land. Her dark gray bodysuit was shredded and soaked in blood, dreadful wounds in her chest, her belly, her right arm stripped of flesh almost to the bone. Kneeling, putting his blaster to one side, he took her unhurt hand in his and held her lightly.
Yes. Will you tell me your name now?
Alinta.
She said, then closed her teeth on her lower lip as a spasm of pain racked her head to toe.
What happened here, Alinta?
He said, leaning a little closer. Who attacked you, and why? Is it to do with the Sith?
No,
she said, the word almost a groan.
Another mission. A double cross. Kalarba pirates. They came in so fast. Jamming equipment took us by surprise. No time to warn you.
Tears filled her glazed eyes.
Sorry. So sorry.
He pressed his hand to her lips. Don't say that, Alinta. Don't you dare. After all that I owe you, after everything you've done for Alderaan, for the Republic. She rolled her head on the scarred metal floor beneath her.
Not enough, she said, her voice fading. So much still to do. And now...
Alinta, he said, and tightened his fingers around hers. Don't you think that way. You have to hold on. Her lips twisted in a grimacing smile.
I can't, Organa. I'm dying.
No, he said, though in his heart he knew denial was futile. Please, hold on a little longer. Try to. You can't give up. You can't. A sound behind them had him turning. It was Kenobi, his lightsaber disengaged and clipped again to his belt. Well? No other survivors, Kenobi said quietly as he dropped to one knee. Alinta shifted, a small sound of distress escaping her lips.
None? They're all dead, my people?
I'm afraid so, Kenobi said, his voice gentle. I'm very sorry. Bail tightened his hold on her hand, feeling the tremors of grief now as well as pain. Master Kenobi, this is Alinta, he said. His voice not quite steady. A friend of the Republic. My friend. A dear friend. Can you help her? Kenobi touched the back of his hand to Alinta's forehead. His gaze turned inward for a moment, and then he shook his head. I'm sorry, he said again. Whatever talent I have for healing is insufficient to tend her injuries. You're not even going to try? Bail's eyes were stinging, and not just from the smoke. How can you not try? How can you just...
Organa,
Alinta whispered.
It's all right.
Her unfocused gaze shifted to Kenobi.
Left bodysuit pocket. Data crystal. Nav comp coordinates. For Zigula.
Kenobi retrieved the data crystal and slipped it into an inside pocket of his tunic.
Thank you, Alinta. What can you tell me about the planet?
Bail stared at him.
What? What was wrong with the man? The woman was dying, and he was interrogating her?
He felt a rush of anger so hot that it cleansed his body of its insignificant discomforts.
Master Kenobi!
The Jedi seared him with a look.
There are questions I must ask, Senator. If Zagula is truly a Sith planet, I need all the information I can get. We can't afford to fly in blind.
Wild space,
said Alinta, her voice almost too faint to hear. Underneath it, that awful bubbling.
Zagula, in wild space.
What else? Said Kenobi, and pressed his hand to her shoulder. Dangerously, wickedly close to shaking her.
Alinta, what else? How do you know it's a Sith planet? How do you know they're planning to attack the Jedi? What sort of attack are they planning? What should I look for when I get there?
He leaned closer again.
Alinta, are the Sith on Zagula?
Sickened, Bail watched Alinta raise her heavy eyelids.
No. No Sith.
She said, her voice ghostly.
A temple. Artifacts. Plans. Location. On data crystal.
Plans? Sith plans?
Kenobi demanded. Do you mean their plans to attack the Jedi? Alinta's face was drained of all its color now. Beneath the drying blood, her lips were turned blue.
Yes.
Kenobi pressed the back of his hand against his mouth, fingers clenched, brows pulled low and tight.
And how do you know all this? Have you been there to this Zegula? Have you seen these things with your own eyes, Alinta?
Organa. Bail.
Alinta's pallid skin looked waxen. In the strangest way, as death crept closer, she somehow looked younger.
I've never lied to you. Trust me, please.
I do, Alinta, he said, chafing her cold hand. I trust you. It's all right.
She looked up at him, and as he stared desperately into her face, he saw the lines of pain slowly smooth from around her eyes and mouth.
Space station, she breathed. Self-destruct. Protect. Secrets. Promise.
Again, he pressed her hands to his lips.
Yes.
How?
Her eyelids drifted closed.
Right. Pocket data crystal. Center comm console. Insert and run.
I will, he said. I'll do it, Alinta.
Alinta?
But Alinta was gone. Not looking at Kenobi, not trusting what he might say or do, he retrieved the data crystal from her bodysuit's other pocket, pushed himself unsteadily to his feet, and picked his way over to the battered, blaster-scarred Centercom console.
Senator, I'm not sure you should...
I didn't ask for your opinion, Master Kenobi, he said coldly. I just made a promise to a dying woman, and I intend to keep it.
By all means, said Kenobi behind him. But first, we should see if it's possible to contact the Jedi Temple from here.
Dearfek. He was right. So they checked all the consoles until they found the Comsat array, which was now a melted slag of wiring and metal, victim of multiple direct blaster hits. Bail glanced at Kenobi. That would be no, then. Turning back to the center console, which luckily hadn't sustained fatal damage, he located its data crystal slot and slid the self-destruct key halfway in. On three, and then we run. One, two, three. He thrust the crystal home, then waited, just to make sure the console accepted the instruction to destroy Alinta's station. The comm console lit up. The data crystal pulsed red, and urgent fingers closed hard around his arm. Run or die, Senator, said Kenobi, his eyes glinting. It's your choice, but choose now. He ran. With his starship disengaged from the docking ring and standing off at a safe distance, he sat in the pilot's seat and watched Alinta's space station blow itself apart, taking the pirate's vessel with it. There was something unbearably melancholy about the silent explosions, so brief and bright against the midnight velvet of space. A funeral pyre should last longer, so the dead could be honored properly. I am sorry, said Kenobi behind him. But she was hurt beyond saving. He nodded. I know. And I'm sorry I had to...
You didn't have to, he said flatly. You chose to. I don't wish to discuss it.
Silence. Then Kenobi sighed.
Was that the first time you ever fought for your life, Senator? The first time you killed?
It was a moment before he could trust himself to answer.
Yes.
I see. And Kenobi probably did. He'd had a first time too, doubtless years before today, but he didn't want to discuss that either. The only person he wanted to bare his soul to about what he'd done, what he'd had to do, on Alinta's space station, was Breha. And he would, eventually. For now, he wasn't even going to think about it. What was the point? The past could not be unwritten.
There is one thing we must discuss, Senator.
Chapter 16. Wild Space. The fanciful expression alone was enough to give a man pause. Redolent of mystery, of adventure, the great untamed unknown. It was a term to ignite the dullest imagination. It meant space beyond the limits of the safe, the predictable, where dangers never before glimpsed by human eyes lurked, stalking the foolish and unwary. The great emptiness, the horror of nothing, where a Sith planet named Zagula had hidden for centuries. As he stared through the viewport at the otherness of hyperspace, Bail found himself wondering, despite his bold protestations of commitment to the mission, am I doing the right thing? Because if this crazy enterprise failed, if he died, he'd be leaving one criffing mess for Breha to clean up. But his wife would say he had no choice, that helping the Jedi was worth every risk. Even when the Jedi are convinced they don't need help, he thought. Yes, she'd say, because a friend doesn't let another friend push him away. Which sounded fine in theory. The only fly in Breha's ointment was the fact that he and Obi-Wan Kenobi weren't friends. A state of affairs that didn't seem likely to change anytime soon. Which, to his surprise, he found himself regretting. Because for all his irritating Jedi hauteur and that startling streak of ruthlessness, so unexpected and confronting, Kenobi was an admirable man. And remarkably good company, too, when he wasn't laying down the law or displaying his startling array of Jedi skills. When he was relaxed, not being a Jedi, Kenobi was intelligent, insightful, and possessed of a sneakily dry wit. And best of all, he thought, I don't have a single thing he wants. How often do I meet someone who wants nothing from me? Rarely. Senator Organa's days were filled with people who cared only for his position, his influence. They flattered, they bowed, they scraped, they begged. The ones who didn't know him well or hadn't paid sufficient attention to the news even tried to bribe, much to their eventual regret. But Kenobi was the opposite. The man was indifferent to family background, political power, social influence. It was proving to be a salutary experience. As the scion of an ancient noble house, privilege had been his from the moment he drew breath. And though he'd never been spoiled, he wasn't so self-deluded he couldn't recognize his advantages. Magnificent home, doting parents, slavishly devoted personal attendants. Human, not droid. Yes, he'd been schooled from the cradle that such advantages required service in return. But that didn't change the fact that he'd never gone hungry a day in his life. He was a prince, the Prince of Alderaan, a blue-blooded member of that most exclusive club, the ruling class. If he hadn't been handsome, he never would have known it. Everyone would have told him he was. Everyone except for Obi-Wan Kenobi, Bail thought. I doubt he's told a single flattering lie his whole life. All right, Kenobi's unflattering opinion of politicians was irritating. But given the acerbic observations on other senators that Bail often exchanged with Padme, he couldn't say the man was entirely wrong. He's just wrong about me. The console chrono ticked over, its display bright in the soft lighting. 9 hours completed of an 11-hour trip, 2 more hours before they reached Zagula. Before he could prove to Kenobi once and for all that Alinta had been everything she'd claimed. Before he could put her final offering of intelligence to good use so she might truly rest in peace. I promise you, Alinta, we will defeat the Sith. That will be your greatest legacy. In the passenger compartment behind him, Obi-Wan Kenobi screamed. Shocked, Bail practically fell out of the pilot's seat and stumbled to the rear of the ship. Sealed into his bunk space, Kenobi screamed again, flailing, his fists and feet thudding against the bunk's rigid curtain. Bail unsealed it using his pilot master's override. Kenobi half fell, half thrashed himself off the bunk, and landed face first on the deck. Then he flipped himself over and began clawing at his face, his chest, his legs. "Get them off me!" he choked out. "Get them off me!" Bail dropped to his knees, not quite certain what to do. After the space station, seeing what Kenobi was capable of, he was reluctant to lay so much as a finger on him. Far safer to take a softly, softly approach. "There's nothing on you, Master Kenobi, there's nothing there!" Kenobi ignored him, or couldn't hear him, tearing at himself like a man in the throes of a Celestian plague delirium. His cheeks and forehead were scored with red marks. Any moment now, he was going to draw blood. Vape caution. Bail seized the Jedi's wrists and held on tight. Master Kenobi, listen! There's nothing there, I swear it! Still no response. Kenobi twisted and fought. Stop it, you fool! You're going to hurt yourself! Shocked, Kenobi stared up at him.
Senator!
His gaze flickered around the passenger compartment as though he couldn't quite remember where they were.
What happened?
Bail let go of him and eased back, giving him some space.
You tell me. One minute you were meditating and the next you were yelling fit to wake the dead.
It was a dream, Kenobi muttered. A memory.
Wincing, he sat up and shifted to brace his back against the bunk space behind him. Then he pulled his knees to his chest and wrapped his arms around them. Bail stared. It was a disconcertingly vulnerable gesture, jarringly at odds with the vivid memory of a Jedi who could carry a starship with the power of his mind and emerge unscathed from a hail of blaster fire that would have slaughtered any ordinary man. And yet here that same Jedi sat now, lost and uncertain, as far from laying down the law as it was possible to get. He stood, brushed carpet lint from his trousers, then retreated to the galley and poured Kenobi 2 fingers of Corellian brandy. He returned to the passenger compartment and held out the glass. Drink, he said sternly, and if you think you don't need it, go look in a mirror. Kenobi took the brandy without argument and tossed its contents down his throat. And if that wasn't a clue that he'd been shaken to his bootstraps, well...
Thank you,
he said hoarsely, handing back the glass. Bail waggled it. More?
No.
He put the glass in the galley's minuscule sink, then headed for the nearest empty chair and sat.
Should I be concerned? For the mission, I mean.
No,
said Kenobi. Despite the brandy, he was still ashen, the livid finger marks on his skin unfaded.
I'm sorry if I disturbed you, Senator.
So, Bail leaned his elbows on the table. We're heading toward a planet with a Sith temple on it, which apparently contains Sith artifacts, their purpose unknown. You're having bad dreams, and this is just a coincidence?
Correct.
Bantha Poodoo, he thought.
Master Kenobi, we had an agreement, he said coldly. What you know, I know, remember?
Kenobi glared.
I remember.
Then what was the dream about? What did you remember?
Nothing of relevance. It was personal, Senator, unrelated to Zegula.
How can you be sure?
Because I'm sure. Kenobi clambered to his feet, awkward with none of his usual oiled ease. It was my dream. I think I know what it meant.
And that would be my point, said Bail. Now I want to know too, because we both know you're perfectly capable of massaging the truth when it suits you.
Kenobi's chin came up, his eyes glittering with temper. There was angry color in his face.
It concerned an incident from my childhood.
Your childhood, Bail repeated, and heard the skepticism.
Really?
Yes, really, said Kenobi. I did have one. He should let it go at that. In truth, what Kenobi had dreamed was none of his business. And if the Jedi said it wasn't connected to the mission, he should accept that assertion. It was, after all, a matter of trust. And in order to get it, one had to show it. But he really wanted to know what could so rattle someone like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Curiosity is besetting sin.
So, what happened? He said, giving in to temptation. In your unlikely childhood. For a long, silent moment, Kenobi just stared. Then he folded his arms and frowned at the deck.
I was 13, nearly 14, on a field trip to Tanab. Part of my Padawan training with Qui-Gon, I was doing a blindfolded force-seeking exercise. Being young and inexperienced, I underestimated its complexity. As a result, I tumbled into a fire beetle pit.
Fire beetles? Bail shuddered. I thought those things were eradicated 30 years ago. Kenobi looked up.
They were, from populated areas. We were in a wasteland on the Ba-Tanab Peninsula.
The faintest of wry smiles. He had himself well in hand again. There's no point to a field trip if you don't encounter obstacles.
Obstacles? The Jedi considered carnivorous beetles obstacles?
The more I learn of them, Bale thought, the less I understand. What would they consider a nest of Gundarks, I wonder? An amusing diversion?
It must have been terrible, he said.
Not at all, Kenobi said politely. It was hilarious.
No, you nearly got eaten alive.
But he didn't say it. He wished now he'd kept his mouth shut. No wonder Kenobi had come out of his trance screaming.
Look, fortunately there was no harm done, Kenobi continued briskly. And in the end, the incident was a useful lesson about the folly of overconfidence.
A useful lesson. Bale swallowed bemused disbelief.
Well, so long as the trip wasn't a complete waste.
Ignoring that, Kenobi frowned again. Overconfidence, he murmured. Then his expression sharpened.
I was mistaken. The memory is relevant. In short, it's a warning, one I would be criminally remiss not to heed. By not curbing your overconfidence, Senator, by allowing you to override my better judgment, I'm putting you in danger.
Bale straightened.
What? How the criff am I overconfident?
You insist on going to Zagula when you are ill-equipped for such a mission.
I thought we'd agreed that I'm more than able to handle myself.
Against droids and pirates, yes, said Kenobi, dismissive, but now we are talking about the Sith.
Alinta said the Sith weren't on Zagula.
I know what she said, Senator. She could have been wrong. Kenobi shook his head as though confronted by a particularly slow-learning Padawan.
Have you for one moment stopped to think about this? Before today, you had never fought for your life. You'd never even been in danger of losing it. The worst defeat you've ever suffered is in the Senate, failing to pass a legislative amendment. And yet, you think you're qualified to accompany me to a Sith planet. You, a politician born into privilege and luxury. What is that, if not overconfidence?
Oh. Bale cleared his throat. I had no idea you despised me so much.
Kenobi seemed genuinely surprised.
I don't despise you. Unlike many of your colleagues, you have never exploited your inherited advantages. As far as you've been able, you've used your political power to better the lives of millions. That is admirable, Senator.
He couldn't decide whether to feel insulted or not.
I see.
No, I'm afraid you don't, said Kenobi, not able or not wanting to hide his frustration. Because outside of the Senate, political power is meaningless. This far from the Republic's influence, your only value lies in what Alderaan would pay to ransom you home.
Then I have no value at all, Master Kenobi. My government has strict instructions not to part with a single credit in exchange for my life.
Again, Kenobi was surprised.
Really?
He laughed, though he was far from amused.
What, you think the possibility of kidnap never crossed my mind?
The Jedi's silence answered him eloquently.
Really, Master Kenobi, he said dryly, you must temper this extravagant flattery.
He stood. I don't deny that my chosen battlefield has been the Senate and not somewhere like Geonosis or Christophsis, but the choice doesn't make me inferior to you. And you seem to have forgotten that we're out here because I'm a politician. I'm the one who learned of this Sith plot, not you.
Yes, but our circumstances have changed significantly since then, Kenobi retorted.
We have the information we sought from your contact. To be blunt, Senator Organa, I no longer need you. And while your political achievements might be admirable, this stubborn insistence on childish heroics is not.
Silence.
Bale stared at him, stunned.
Nobody spoke to him like that.
Nobody. And then, as the tide of his own anger rose, he saw something flicker deep in Kenobi's eyes. Understanding dawned.
You're afraid.
Now it was Kenobi's turn to be stunned.
Politician, not moron, he explained, very dry.
Also not blind.
What aren't you telling me, Master Kenobi? Did you dream about Zagula as well as those fire beetles?
What has the Force shown you that has you so concerned?
Kenobi began pacing, one hand rubbing the back of his neck, fingers kneading at the muscles. It was another reminder that while the man might be a Jedi, he was also human. Nothing. Because the dark side clouds everything, Bale thought, then said, and that's why you're afraid. Kenobi shot him a sharp look. We may well own and count as Sith artifacts on Zagula, but they could be as dangerous as the Sith who made them. His lips twisted in a thin, unamused smile. If I am cautious, it is with good reason, so I urge you again to reconsider your position. Now that we have Zagula's location, I can return you to the safety of Coruscant and... Bale shook his head. We don't have that kind of time to waste. For all we know, this attack on the Jedi is imminent. Besides, if the Sith are as dangerous as you claim, you'd be crazy not to have someone with you. Even someone as limited as me. Now I'm going back to the cockpit to get some more work done. We're about an hour and a half away from Zagula. I'll let you know when we're ready to drop out of hyperspace. Senator, said Kenobi, halting. There was a nasty bite to the word, but as well as infuriated frustration, his eyes also showed reluctant respect. Well, that's something, I suppose, Bale thought. As he reached the compartment doorway, he hesitated, then turned back. Oh, yes. Just one last thing. I want your word you won't try any of your Jedi mind tricks on me. Kenobi's eyes chilled. I beg your pardon? Please, don't insult my meager, privileged intelligence. I have access to certain classified material. When it's convenient or expedient, you Jedi influence people. Bale let his urbane, polished mask slip then, let Kenobi catch the merest glimpse of what he kept hidden. But I give you fair warning. Attempt to influence me against my will, and I'll show you what exploiting privilege looks like. Kenobi nodded. Senator? No reluctant respect now. They were back to Hauteur. Arrogant man, insufferable Jedi, Bale thought, then said. So do I have your word? He persisted. No funny business? Kenobi nodded. You have it. Thank you, he said, and leaving Kenobi to his own devices, to meditate or dream or nightmare himself into unreason, who cared, he returned to the cockpit, picked up his data pad, accessed his files on the latest Mimban dispute, and buried himself and his riled temper in work. Obi-Wan watched Organa stamp out of the passenger compartment and swish the dividing curtain closed behind him. Then he closed his eyes and released a long, slow breath. Politicians. Practically always far more trouble than they were worth, and this one was proving inconveniently stubborn, uncomfortably astute, because he was afraid. No matter how hard he tried, how deeply he meditated, he could sense nothing about Zagula. And he should be able to. It was one of his particular talents, the ability to sense the shape of things to come. It wasn't an infallible gift. The droids on Geonosis had taken him completely by surprise, but it didn't fail him often. It certainly hadn't failed him at the space station. This close to Zagula, he should be able to feel something. But all he'd achieved with his meditation was that one annihilating dream. His skin crawled, remembering. The excitement of a field trip, his eagerness to impress Qui-Gon, his blithe self-belief that this exercise would be so easy. He was a Padawan at last. No agricultural core for him. Nothing was beyond him now. The dry Tanab wasteland beneath his running feet, the cool wind in his blindfolded face. How he'd let his attention drift, imagining Qui-Gon's admiring praise. So stupid. And then, the dirt beneath him crumbling, his body falling, striking the ground, a hot rush of embarrassment that he hadn't saved himself with the Force. Followed swiftly by terror as the fire beetles attacked. Breathing deeply, he wrenched his mind from the past. An hour and a half until they reached Zagula. Hardly any time at all to unravel its mystery. To arm himself with something, anything, that could help him win this latest battle with the Sith. He felt his belly tighten and his skin crawl again, this time with apprehension. Seeking comfort, he turned to the mantra he'd learned as a small boy, long before he became Qui-Gon's Padawan.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Beware the dark side, Jedi.
Returning to his bunk space, he healed himself behind the curtain and reached for the clarity recent meditations had granted him.
If I only try harder, I will see Zagula. I will see what's waiting for us there. I must see what's waiting. We can't fly in there blind.
But as he slipped once more into the first level of meditative trance, a whisper of pain began to throb in his temples. The nav comp's beeping roused Bale from the light doze that had claimed him. Still angry, although Breha would probably call it sulking, he looked around and shouted, not in the mood to play humble messenger boy to a Jedi. We're here, Zagula! He double-checked the nav comp's readings. Good. Definitely clear space. Then disengaged the hyperdrive, easing them back to sublight speed. His heart was pounding. His palms were damp. As hyperspace began to warp and twist, stars emerging from its unreality, he heard Kenobi's footsteps behind him and turned. Swore.
What in... Kenobi, are you sick?
The Jedi's face was bloodless again, tightness pinched around his eyes and mouth. No, he said shortly. A headache, it's nothing. Bale was tempted to grab the man by his shoulders and shake some sense into him. It's not nothing. You look like you're about to retch. Have you taken a painkiller?
I have not. Drugs, like alcohol, blur the force.
And I suppose a megrim enhances it? Kenobi raised an eyebrow. Keep shouting at me, Senator, and I will retch. All over your clean cockpit. Is that what you want?
What I want is for you to stop being a Jedi just for one lousy minute, Bale thought. Admit you're human and accept some help.
But that didn't seem likely this side of a galactic miracle. Defeated, Bale turned around again and sucked in a sharp breath.
Zagula.
An ochre globe suspended against the dark, bathed in the light of a mild yellow sun, courted by three dignified small moons. Beautiful. Unknown. Full of secrets to be carefully unhidden. In the distance behind it, like a backdrop on a stage, a baleful, raging scarlet nebula. The intensity of its color took his breath away. Wild space. He felt his heart thump his ribs hard.
Look at that, Master Kenobi. Isn't that a sight?
Yes. Bale felt himself scowl. Well, excuse me for being excited, he thought. I'm not a galaxy-trotting Jedi. I've never been this far from home. It's a sight for me, do you mind? He snatched up the data pad into which he'd coded the coordinates from Alinta's data crystal and punched their new destination into the nav comp. The machine hummed, then flashed green. Okay, he said. Local planetary destination is coded and locked. We'll be guided directly to the Sith Temple. He glanced over his shoulder. So, do we go in? Kenobi nodded, then winced.
Yes, but with great care. And don't forget to sweep for life forms. We don't want any unpleasant surprises.
The man looked dreadful. Bale almost told Kenobi to sit in the commsat seat, but held his tongue at the last moment. They'd only have another argument. You're not picking up any Sith presence?
No.
And you've been trying? Kenobi gave him a lethal look.
Of course.
Which would account for the megrim, unless... I don't begin to know how this Jedi and Sith business works, and I know this sounds far-fetched, but is there any chance the planet's making you sick? Kenobi blotted his face on his smoke-stained sleeve. It's a Sith haven, Senator. Anything is possible. That sat him up.
Really?
Then maybe we should rethink this, Master Kenobi. I don't want to...
I'm sorry? Said Kenobi, incredulous. After demanding to accompany me on this mission, then steadfastly refusing to turn back at every opportunity, now you're having second thoughts? Now you want to give up and go home?
Well, yes,
Maybe. Because you look like death, and I'm not a Jedi, and you were right about one thing. We have no idea what's waiting for us down there. But he couldn't say that out loud. It was hard enough admitting it to himself. So does this mean I am what he thinks I am? Nothing but a pampered politician? No, he wasn't. This isn't about wanting to go home, he retorted. I'm just not sure how wise it is to continue if you're not well. I have a headache, Senator. I am not at death's door, Kenobi said grimly. But were I blind, deaf, and lame, I would still need to know if there's a Sith threat to the Jedi down there. So, let us proceed as planned. Agreed? Bail stared at the planet, so tauntingly within their grasp, stared again at Kenobi, felt his skin crawl with unease. How does the saying go, he thought. When in doubt, don't. Then he said, You're sure? Kenobi lowered his head for a moment, as though gathering his strength. Then he looked up and nodded. Quite sure. All right, he said, feeling his heart thud. But if the pain gets worse, if you feel anything else, anything, then we turn back. We think of another way to do this. Deal? Deal, said Kenobi, tightly, taking hold of the commsat chair. Didn't sit, though, no. He was too criffing stubborn for that. Bail shook his head and thought, Jedi. All right, he said. Here we go. Here I go, Breha. Wish me luck, my love. He pushed them out of cruising speed, and the ship hurtled toward Zagula. Moment by moment, the planet seemed to expand until it filled the viewport. They flashed past its moons, hurtled closer, closer. Breathing deeply, he eased back the ship's speed, preparing to enter the planet's exosphere. How's the headache, Master Kenobi? He asked, tossing the question behind him. Are you all right? Kenobi grunted. The ship's bones vibrated gently as Zagula's highest atmospheric layer claimed them. His heart was beating so hard it felt like his veins would explode. He couldn't drag his eyes away from the planetary surface so far below them, the cloud swirls and the continents, the dearth of open water. The navcomp beeped again, a minor course correction. Atmospheric conditions were knocking them around. He eased back the speed a little farther, mindful of making a smooth re-entry, mindful that Kenobi was a pilot and watching. Then, he engaged the ship's sensors and swept Zagula for lifeforms. Nothing human or humanoid registering, he said. Lower-level animal and plant signatures. At least the life support readings confirm the planet won't kill us. Another grunt from Kenobi. They slid through the ionosphere, gliding lower and lower toward the surface. Bail wanted to press his nose to the viewport, be the first to see their destination, the Sith Temple. But Zagula seemed abandoned. No civilization, no infrastructure. No Sith. So that was something, at least. He was worrying for nothing. They were going to be fine. He slowed their rate of descent again, just to be on the safe side. Now he could make out tracts of scraggled woodland, cliffs and valleys, stretches of open, barren plain, boulders scattered like marbles. Everything looked sere and lifeless, inhospitable, formidable. He glanced at the navcomp. According to the readout, they were only minutes from the temple. Behind him, Kenobi muttered something. I'm sorry, Bail said, reluctantly turning. I didn't quite catch... His heart punched so hard it nearly broke his ribs. Kenobi was on his knees, his face gray, the whites of his eyes turned a gaudy blood red. Sweat poured off him, soaking his battle-scorched Jedi tunic, and he clung to the commsat seat as though it were his last hope of survival. What is it? He demanded. Master Kenobi!
Sith!
Kenobi groaned, his throat working, the long muscles in his neck standing out like metal hawsers.
Get us out of here now!
Bail felt his mouth suck dry and his heartbeat stutter.
Sith? But Alinta said she wouldn't lie. I don't understand how we could get so close without you feeling their presence,
Bail thought. He reached for the helm, ready to pull the ship up, felt his fingers close around the controls, and then cried out as an invisible hand caught him by the back of the neck, dragged him out of the pilot's seat, and threw him like a child's rag doll down the length of the cockpit and into the corridor beyond. He struck the wall, then fell to the deck, his head hitting the plating with a sickening crack. Bright lights burst before his eyes, and reality spun on its crazy axis. Breathless, all he could do was sprawl on his back and stare at the green ceiling above him.
Kenobi? Was that Kenobi? He thought. What the crap is going on?
Reality kept on spinning. He was falling. He was falling. No, the ship was falling. It was diving without restraint or sanity towards Zagula's unkind surface.
Where's Kenobi? Why doesn't he do something?
Sweet, sour saliva flooded his mouth as he rolled first on his side, and then to his knees, and finally as he found his feet. Heaving, spitting, bile burning his throat, he staggered into the cockpit and saw Master Kenobi at the helm, both hands on the controls, aiming their starship toward the unforgiving ground.
Hey! What the cark are you...
Kenobi's fist came up, clenched to white knuckles.
I'm sorry.
Bail cried out as that terrible power closed around his throat. He was a statue of flesh, a living man turned to stone, but he could still see. They were crashing into daylight, into wilderness, desolation. Death was rushing up to meet them.
Sorry,
Kenobi whispered, anguished, one hand still on the helm.
So sorry.
Bail's ears were ringing, his vision blurred and darkened.
Briha, Briha, don't be sorry, he croaked. Do something. I don't want to die.
No response from the Jedi. Then Kenobi's face twisted, and he began to shake, bone-deep tremors that chattered his teeth and shivered his hair. Bail heard the man's harsh breathing, rasping.
Come on, Kenobi, Bail thought. Come on. You've beaten the Sith before. You can beat them again.
He stared out of the viewport, starving for air. He could count the trees now. They were so close to the ground. Count the trees, count the rocks. Imagine the pain as they punched Zagula's grim skin. They flashed over something, an elaborate black structure. The Sith Temple? Too late. They were gone. He'd most likely imagined it. Closer to the ground now. Nearly there. Nearly there. Kenobi howled, a shocking sound of rage and pain. His hand on the helm controls wrenched their small ship's nose up. Dropped its tail, dropped speed, tried to undo what he had done. And then, still howling, he let go of the helm completely, unfisted his other hand, finger by finger, and turned away from the sight of oncoming death. Blood was pouring from his eyes, his nose, his mouth. He looked like a bleeding ghost, blood jeweled in his beard. Released from that pitiless fist, gasping, Bail flinched as the Jedi's arms closed hard about him, smothered him like a desperate parent trying to protect his child. He felt a rush of heat, felt the cockpit warp, marveled at the way the air seemed to turn gold. Fear ceased. Anguish ceased. He felt safe and calm, serene.
Briha.
And then... the ship's belly struck the first of the trees with a shriek like a cat's claws along the metal hull. It ripped through their foliage, splintering their branches, shredding their leaves. The ship slewed wildly, like a maddened harpooned whale. As the strident crash alarms blared, the emergency impact bags deployed, but imperfectly. One ballooned out, one didn't, and the ship began to roll. Bail felt the cockpit tip, slowly felt himself and Kenobi obediently follow. Time slowed down, stretching like warm caramel taffy. With a sound as loud as the universe's creation, the ship struck the hard ground. Metal groaned and buckled, transparasteel shattered, flesh tore. The golden light vanished, and reality disappeared. Chapter 17. Consciousness, grudgingly returning, told Obi-Wan he wasn't dead quite yet. Nobody who died could hurt this much. Piecemeal memory replayed the recent past in fits and starts. The sourness of defeat stung his eyes and churned his belly.
I should have fought harder,
I should not have succumbed. The voice had struck out of nowhere, a deafening shout rank with malice and hate, battering his spirit, annihilating his will. Ink pouring into a glass of clear water, ink with blood in it, ink full of rage. It was the voice of the Sith, smashing through his defenses as though they weren't there.
Submit, submit, Jedi, submit.
Only once before had he felt a darkness like it. Felt the dark side trying to turn his blood to sludge, trying to disrupt his light and brilliant connection with the Force. On Naboo, in Theed, fighting the red and black Sith assassin. But then, he'd been able to resist that dark slurry. He'd been able to purge himself of its taint and win. But not this time. This time, it was as though an army of Sith had bent their malevolent minds upon him. And though he'd fought against them, battled the shattering compulsion to fly the ship to its death, battled until he thought his sanity would give way, in the end, the Sith had won.
Jedi, submit.
The voice no longer shouted its hate and rage. But even in the silence, something bubbled in his blood. Something rotten. Something insidious. A creeping sense of dark decay. A lingering malaise. Smoldering, patient. Promising a later conflagration. With every breath he took, he could smell the stench of Sith. Zagula was steeped in it. No wonder the place was barren. And I didn't feel it. I was blind and deaf to it. A harsh truth to ponder when he was able to think straight. Memory stirred. Organa. Where was the senator? Had he survived? He remembered force-flinging Organa out of the cockpit. Remembered closing the force around the man's throat. After that... Did I kill him? Is he dead? Senator Organa! Senator! Can you hear me? His voice sounded ridiculous, slushy and uncertain, as though he were drunk. Or at least how he imagined it would sound if he were drunk. He'd never been drunk, so it was only a guess. Organa didn't answer.
Don't let him be dead. Senator Organa, answer me if you can.
Nothing. With a grunting effort, he opened his eyes. And was dazzled by weak sunlight, pale yellow washed with red, an overcast from the nebula, that baleful scarlet curtain. Blinking slowly, he let his gaze track from side to side, and waited for his battered mind to make sense of what he saw and felt. He was still in the ship, lying neatly on his back in the corridor running between the cockpit and the passenger compartment. The deck was buckled beneath him, digging into his mid-spine and lifting his knees. The hull overhead was torn wide from nose to tail. This was a starship that would never fly again.
So I'm imprisoned here. We're imprisoned if Organa still lives. A slow death instead of a swift one.
The Sith win after all. No, that was defeatist. A Jedi did not think such things. He closed his eyes and took closer stock of his condition. Everything hurt, yes, but it wasn't the same kind of pain he'd felt after flying into the Coruscant terrorist attack. Then, he'd been broken, and the pain had been diamond and scarlet and bright. This pain was a sluggish, sullen crimson, an echo of his previous hurts only, which were healed but not forgotten. With difficulty, he lifted his head and stared into the cockpit itself. The helm had been crushed, as though a giant had hammered it with one angry fist. The transperisteel viewport was a mass of jagged splinters. Charred wiring, some of it intermittently sparking, dangled from the ceiling and lay on the deck in colorful intestinal tangles. As though sight had spurred his other senses into action, now he could hear and smell his surroundings. The flat tang of that burned wiring, the acrid sizzle of spilled hydraulic fluids. In the cool outside air drifting through the breached hull, metallic smoke and floating ash coating his tongue with a patina of soot. It mixed with his saliva, a horrible taste, and crackling through the silence, what sounded like flames. Not huge flames, not devouring flames, just cheerful campfire flickers. What did that mean? Was the ship on fire? If it was on fire, was he about to burn to death? A hideous thought.
Tavor Mandirli, get up!
Get up! Don't just lie here! But his bones seemed disjointed, his muscles lax, without tone. His disobedient body ignored the command. Deep in his veins, the black sludge weighed him down. And deeper still, faint but insistent, he heard a gleeful, spiteful Sith whisper.
Die, Jedi.
A fresh surge of adrenaline drowned the command. His mind cleared again, and he realized the flames were burning outside the ship. Its superheated hull must have ignited dry grass or deadwood around the crash site. There was no strong wind blowing. That would help to keep the fire contained. How much available fuel was there to feed the flames? There were trees. He thought he remembered trees in those last desperate moments before they struck the ground. But since he didn't appear to be in the midst of a raging forest inferno, perhaps I won't be burned alive after all. But he could still starve, or bleed to death from an untreated wound, or freeze if Zagula's night temperatures plunged. The ship could be perched on the edge of a cliff. One earth tremor or a strong wind could send it hurtling into a ravine, and he'd be crushed to a paste. In other words, Kenobi, he thought, don't just lie here. Get up. Get out. Take control and find a way out of this mess. Still, his recalcitrant body refused to listen.
Die, Jedi.
Without warning, with a swiftness that stole his laboring breath, the ship vanished around him, and he was back on Tanab. 13 years old again, skinny and scared, screaming in horror as the fire beetles feasted.
Qui-Gon! Qui-Gon! Help me!
But Qui-Gon couldn't hear him. Qui-Gon was dead. Suddenly, he was 25, still a Padawan, fighting the Sith. Trapped between force fields, he saw the Zabrak assassin strike, saw the shock and pain in his master's face as the Sith's scarlet lightsaber thrust home, felt the Sith's vicious triumph, felt his own grief and rage. And on the floor of the cavern, on brutal Geonosis, rendered helpless by two lightsaber cuts, he watched Dooku toy with bold, rash Anakin. Silver hair gleaming, teeth bared in a smile, the ageless Sith, the treacherous Jedi, prowled around Anakin with insolent ease, deflected each blinding attack with casual, consummate skill, forced the error, and took Anakin's arm. He came back to himself shouting, "Anakin! Anakin!" "Sorry," said a tired, familiar voice. "I'm afraid you're stuck with me."
"Organa!"
The senator knelt beside him, a steadying hand on his shoulder. Confusion and horror surrendered to a deluge of relief. He let his head fall back.
"You're not dead?"
"Not quite," said Organa. "Believe me, I'm as surprised as you are." His olive skin had a greenish cast to it. He had a black eye and a split lip. His left arm was supported by a makeshift sling, the sleeve of a sacrificed shirt. His usually immaculate clothing was dirt-smudged and wrinkled, his trousers torn at both knees. Obi-Wan's heart eased its racing.
"Senator!"
"Master Kenobi." Because of the split lip, Organa spoke slowly and with great care. "So, do you want to say it first, or will I?" Obi-Wan frowned.
"Say what? I told you so? And how would that help?"
His head was pounding.
"Where have you been?"
"Outside," said Organa. "Exploring."
"Exploring?"
he thought, then said,
"Wonderful.
The senator raised an eyebrow. It's been nearly an hour since we crashed. You were unconscious. I got bored.
So, you played tourist. And what did you find?
Not a lot.
There's a fire.
Organa shrugged, one-shouldered. I started that. Thought we might need it come nightfall. Given what's happened, I'm not prepared to accept the sensor readings at face value. If this place does have predators, fire should make them think twice about attacking us.
Very enterprising.
Thank you. Organa sat back on his heels. Our bad luck with communications equipment continues, by the way. The ship's commsat array is completely destroyed, and the emergency transponder beacon smashed. No hope of getting a message out, even if anyone was listening for us.
Which was unlikely. The chances of his last message reaching the temple were slim to none.
I see.
Look, you're banged around, said Organa, but I don't think anything's broken. He grimaced. At least not physically. Their predicament wasn't the least bit amusing. It was light years from amusing, but still Obi-Wan felt his lips twist in a smile.
Is that your diplomatic way of asking if I've gone insane?
The thought did cross my mind.
Die, Jedi. Die, Jedi. Die, Jedi. Die.
He closed his eyes, felt his blood-caked eyelashes scratching his skin.
And mine.
But you're all right now.
Fire beetles, Qui-Gon, Anakin's severed arm.
I have no idea, Senator,
he thought, then said,
Yes, I'm fine.
He opened his eyes.
Are you?
Organa's expression was a muddle of bewilderment and anger.
I'll mend. What the hell happened? What do you think? We sprang a trap.
He tried to sit up, flopped like a landed fish. Organa helped him, one-handed. Dizzy, heart pounding, he leaned against the damaged corridor wall. Organa propped himself up opposite, and they stared at each other in silence. The senator spoke first.
Alinta wouldn't betray me. She was used, manipulated somehow.
Loyalty was an admirable trait.
Perhaps. But it's a sad fact, Senator, that most people have a price.
You don't. The crackling of little flames, the sighing of a rising breeze, a metal screech as branches scraped their starship's twisted hull.
No,
he said at last,
and neither do you.
Organa sat a little straighter, wincing as the movement jarred his hurt arm.
So who was the trap for, do you think?
You or me?
Die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die, Jedi, die.
He shrugged, trying to ignore the gibbering whisper. The pain behind his eyes drummed, relentless.
We each have enemies, but I suspect the Sith want both of us dead.
Both of us?
You, I understand. But me?
Come, Senator, he said. Don't be so modest. Like the Jedi, you are becoming a familiar public person.
Yes, but that doesn't explain why the Sith would want to kill me.
Put at its simplest, they are a corruption of the Jedi,
Obi-Wan said.
Like us, they can see things. Perhaps you're destined to become an obstacle to their ambitions.
So they used Alinta to get to me. And they used me to get to you.
Another silence, as Organa made his fretful peace with the truth. Then, his face twisted.
Obi-Wan, I am sorry.
I know.
So am I.
I wonder how they...
Organa shook his head.
Oh well, I don't suppose it matters now. Alinta and her people are dead.
It mattered. And if they survived this... He'd make it his business to learn the truth. But first, of course, they had to survive. Another silence. Then Organa cleared his throat.
I need to know, Obi-Wan.
Before, when you... when I lost control of myself and tried to kill us? Yeah, said Organa, uncomfortable. Then. You said it was the Sith, but how is that possible? We were still a long way from Zagula's surface, and you're saying they still were able to reach out and control you? Are they truly that powerful? Obi-Wan let his gaze drop, stared at his filthy, blood-stained leggings. It would seem so, Bail. And you weren't expecting that. So hard to admit it.
No.
Organa picked at a rip in his trousers. That's a worry. I find that worrying. How much exactly do you know about these Sith?
Not enough, apparently.
You think this is funny? Obi-Wan looked up.
I'm not laughing.
But Organa wasn't mollified, and beneath his anger was turbulent fear. So was Alinta wrong? Are there Sith on this planet, Master Kenobi? Are they coming for us now? Should we, I don't know, run?
So much for first name pleasantries.
Run? Obi-Wan echoed. Run where, do you suggest?
I don't know. Away?
Senator, I was not attacked by an individual Sith, he said carefully. I suspect the source of the onslaught was some kind of Sith technology, a modified holocron, perhaps.
Whatever that is, Organa said, impatient. But if you're not sure, you could be wrong. You said it yourself. You know hardly anything about them. There could be a whole tribe of Sith somewhere out there, and here we are waiting for them to come and kill us.
Die, Jedi.
Calm yourself, Senator, he snapped, then took a deep breath, eased it out with care. Fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. Beware the dark side, Jedi. There is no tribe. There are only two.
Two? Said Organa, taken aback. That's all? Are you sure about that?
Quite sure. He was equally certain he shouldn't have mentioned it, but under the circumstances...
All right, said Organa warily, if you say so. But they could still be here.
They're not.
Baffled, the senator stared at him. You say that like it's a foregone conclusion, but how do you know?
Time to end this unfortunate conversation.
Because I am a Jedi. Accept it.
Oh, enough with the lofty Jedi pronouncements, said Organa, pushing untidily to his feet.
You flattened your moral high ground when you crashed my ship. What proof do you have that the Sith aren't here? How can you state with any degree of certainty we won't face them?
Unless...
Obi-Wan saw the realization dawn, watched Organa make that inconvenient, intuitive leap, felt the man's jolt of disbelief, of incredulous anger.
You know where they are, Organa breathed, don't you? Where are they, Master Kenobi?
He held Organa's hot stare steadily.
Not here.
What else do you know? What else did you lie about? Do you know who they are, too?
Even if I did, and I told you, what purpose would that serve?
You Jedi, said Organa, then pressed the back of his hand to his lips, heedless of his hurt, as though struggling to contain a torrent of foul abuse.
I want to know everything, and I want to know now. Tell me, Master Kenobi, or I'll...
You'll what? He said, suddenly so tired. Send me to bed without my supper? Must I remind you again, Senator, I am not, I have never been, answerable to you.
Oh, yes, that's right, Organa retorted, seething. You're answerable to Master Yoda and the Jedi Council. And who are they answerable to?
Themselves. How convenient.
Your insinuation is insulting, he said coldly. Master Yoda is the most honorable...
I don't care. I'm not interested. I want the Sith's names, Kenobi. You might as well tell me, because I'm not going to stop asking. I'm going to drive you mad with questions until you tell me, or kill me.
I don't need to kill you, Bail, he said gently. There's every chance Zagula will do that. Sooner rather than later.
Organa spat out an incoherent curse in some angry alien tongue, then stamped out of the corridor. A groaning sound of metal as the ship's damaged hatch was shoved aside. Obi-Wan let his head fall back against the uneven wall behind him. His headache was ferocious now, and the black sludge in his veins was bubbling. It clogged his heart, darkened his vision. The only thing he could see was death.
Die, Jedi.
No! He scrambled upright, then fell against the wall, panting. Fought against the words. Fought against corrosive despair. Against capitulation. Fought to feel the light side in this place of utter dark. Through his nearly 35 years of Jedi training and discipline at the gibbering voice that was bent upon his obliteration. The dark retreated. Not far, but far enough. Barely. Nauseous, dizzy again, he staggered along the corridor, found the half-crushed hatchway, and pushed himself outside. Looked for Organa, worried the senator had stormed off in his fury and even now was breaking his leg or his neck. But no. Organa was standing a stone's throw away by the fire he'd made, feeding it some of the dead branches he'd collected. If he knew he was being watched, he gave no sign. Anger billowed off him like the heat from his flames. More than happy to leave him alone, now that he was assured the man hadn't let temper lead him into disaster, Obi-Wan stared at their surroundings. They'd crashed onto a plateau. Stunted trees, their foliage drab brown and scanty. Scattered red rocks, yellowish brown soil. A ragged, jagged ravine. No sight or sound of water. The river that had formed it must be long dead. Or this was the dry season, if Zagula had seasons. Beneath the acrid stink of smoke and crashed starship, the air smelled cold and old. No birdsong, no beast sounds, no paw prints in the dirt. And everywhere, the dark side, a slurry in his blood. The pale blue sky washed with hot red behind it. Wheeled high overhead, the fire roared. Tavor Mandirli screamed as his fingers splintered, one defenseless bone at a time. A tall man, a thin man, dying for principle. Dying with courage, murdered by greed. His eyes were gouged from their sockets so he couldn't see his own blood. His tongue was cut out so there were no cries for help. No pitiful pleas for mercy. When they set him on fire, he wasn't yet dead. Obi-Wan, on his hands and knees, retched and retched. 19 years old he'd been when Mandirli died. Barely younger than Anakin. He'd wept like a youngling, and Qui-Gon did not reprove him. Exhausted, he collapsed on the cold dirt of Zagula. The memory so raw, like the fire beetles, like Qui-Gon and Anakin. The worst of his past dredged into the daylight, as fresh and as frightful as when it first happened. Kenobi. He dragged open his eyes and rolled his head to the side. What was that? Said Bail Organa, standing a few paces distant. His face was stricken. What the hell is going on? Kenobi tried to speak, had to cough and spit again. Used the time to consider how best to reply. Did Organa need the details? No, he didn't.
It's still the Sith, I think, he croaked. The dark side, using difficult memories against me. Bail, you must be careful. Beware negative emotions. This place will feed on them. It will glut itself and gorge on you until you die. Obi-Wan, I'm fine. You're the one in trouble. Whatever this is, it's affecting your mind.
His mind, his body, his bones were scouring thin. His blood was getting thicker, turgid with the dark. Aching, he sat up.
I'm fighting it.
Instead of answering, Organa went back into the crashed ship. Obi-Wan braced his elbows on his knees and rested his head in his hands. On a deep breath, he reached within for the Force. Reached for the light side, and instead drowned in the dark. A warm hand touched his back.
Hey,
It's all right. We'll figure this out.
Obi-Wan gathered the shreds and tatters of his self-control, stared at the cloth and bottle of water Organa held out to him.
Your face is covered in dry blood, said the senator. If you don't clean up, I'll be the one having nightmares.
Obi-Wan touched his cheeks, his chin, felt the truth of Organa's words, took the cloth and bottle and washed his face, his beard, tried to wash the foul taste from his mouth, and couldn't. The dark side was a poison